watch too many of you cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And wow, what a beautiful, beautiful start to the morning. Summer is just around the corner. You know, it's been a long wait, and hopefully we'll enjoy every minute of the warm weather that we'll be receiving, and that you will enjoy the summer. You know, we don't get enough of it. Unlike those who live in sunny places and warm places that are there 8, 9, 10 months out of the year, we only get a few, and we've got to be very mindful of that to enjoy the weather, enjoy the time. And so I'm really excited with all the things that the warm weather and the summer brings. How you doing, Sam?
I'm good, Earl. The weather is perfect if I could have it this way. And yesterday, I swear, every day, sign me up. It's too good.
I mean, you just look outside and, you know, I know there are people who love the cold weather. They like the snow and ice and all of that.
It's pretty and all, but come on, look outside, well, feel that sun.
It doesn't compare with the trees, you know, the leaves coming back on the trees and life coming back, you know, to
makes it a little easier to get up every day.
It's beautiful. You know, I want to. We're going to be joined by Mayor Cavalier Johnson, the new mayor of the city of Milwaukee. It'll be my first time having him on the air since he's been the mayor. He's a good friend. He's a guy who I followed him for many years. He's certainly the right guy for the right time in the city of Milwaukee. And so we're going to spend some time talking about an array of things, and it won't be the last time. I'm really excited about the new mayor, Cavalier Johnson. But I want to go here, and I wonder how many of you have experienced what I've experienced. So I live in the city. I don't live in the rural area. And you know, when you see grass that grows to 2 feet high and goes to budding, and you know, and I'm not exaggerating, two feet high in the city, and your lawn is pristine and your neighbor's lawn is 2 feet high, and you got to ask the question, man, what is going on? You're a homeowner. I mean, even people who rent, you know, and the owners of those properties, why is it people won't cut their grass? Look, I don't have any dandelions on my property because I work hard to make sure that I don't have those things. I think they destroy a lawn. I think there's beauty in the creation, and I see beauty in a nice green lawn. I know everybody doesn't see that, but I do. And so I work really hard to make sure with fertilizer during the fall, right before, you know, the snows, to make sure that you can do something to prevent these dandelions and all of that stuff that really makes lawns look, you know, like they're out in a wheat field. That's all right if you live in a rural area, you know. I mean, and maybe it's not all right there, because I see people in some rural areas that they make sure that around their homes the grass is beautiful. But, I mean, I just don't know, you know. I was talking with one of my neighbors early this morning when I was getting ready to leave. There's a guy on the corner whose grass, you know, there's some grass that's sprinkled in between all of the weeds that are on his property. It's a corner lot, and so it's a long lot, and it just is hideous looking. And I just don't understand it. I was talking to my neighbor before I left. I said, listen, man, I may just go over and cut this wheat because I'm tired of looking at it, right? And not to mention, once dandelions, go to seed, all the hard work that I put in on my lawn is wasted because of what this guy has done. I don't know if that bothers you. I don't know if that makes me a bad neighbor. But what are your thoughts? 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Does this make me just a ninny? Is it something that I just suggest ignore as I've been ignoring it? And many other neighbors who are saying, that's horrible. What do you do in a situation like that? Do you collectively as neighbors go and knock on the guy's door and say, hey, man, this is not a jungle. And yes, it's your property. But, do you just not say anything? I'm not the kind of guy who's going to go and say something to the guy because, there's got to be something off kilter with the person who looks at lots that are manicured, and then his, is in the worst condition that you will see anywhere. Now, I know I did this many years back. I took my lawnmower over and did his lot, and I remember having busted my lawnmower because there was so much debris on that lot. I certainly don't want to run the risk of that this time around. But what do you do? I just am at wit's end. And I know as bad as it's gotten, as bad as it is right now, it'll get progressively worse if something is not done. So I'm giving some serious thought to going over this afternoon and cutting, that wheat field. The guy clearly doesn't care. He's lived there forever. He's a kind of a strange person. And again, my issue is, am I going to be doing something that I probably shouldn't be doing? What are your thoughts? 844-967-2789. I do. I mean, there's a couple other neighbors in my neighborhood that are, elderly or are ill. And I go and I do that automatically. I cut their lawns because I know they're not in a position to do it. I don't ask any compensation for it. I mean, that's what neighbors are supposed to be about in my estimation. Neighbors are supposed to help one another. Now, this other person that we're talking about, he is a neighbor. No question about it, but he's an eccentric kind of guy. But I'm going to do what I've done now for, a number of years. Go over and maybe he'll hear me cutting his lawn and maybe he'll come out. That's certainly not my reason for doing it. It's a strange, strange reality when you continue to fight a battle that you almost feel like they're not going to win. What are your thoughts? 844-967-2789. This guy is, he's a weird guy. But that still doesn't change the fact that his lawn alone just makes everything look horrible.
It was no Mo May in his defense. You're supposed to save the bees.
What?
No Mo May.
What's that?
It's about having the bees come out of hibernation, so you're not supposed to cut your grass so they have a better chance. I don't know exactly the logistics of it, but some people were participating in it this year. But if he, after today or tomorrow, if it's still looking a little rough, I will not defend.
Oh, so what is No Mo May?
I think it's a more of an environmental activist movement of where people are saying you shouldn't really trim your bushes or cut your grass until June, because May tends to be the time where bugs and bees and such kind of come out of hibernation, and they have a harder time or like get killed more if you cut your grass and stuff.
So no more
May. No Mo May. Like no mowing.
No, oh, no Mo May.
No mowing.
Well, okay.
But now it's June, so mow that grass.
Well, you know, I'm a person who loves the creation and love the bees and know their purpose and all those things. But if it means I've got to allow the grass to grow to be 2 feet high.
Fair enough.
In the city.
It's not very pretty.
No, you know, I'm sorry, the bees are going to have to find another place. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789 is the number. What do you say? You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back. You can't see. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And as promised, on the air, the new mayor of the city of Milwaukee, Mr. Cavalier Johnson. How you doing, Mayor Johnson?
I'm doing all right, Earl. How are you doing today?
All right. I want to apologize for the little technical issues we are having right now. We'll get those cleaned up. I don't know if you heard, but I was just on the air for the first couple minutes of the show talking about a neighbor, and maybe you can help me, who has allowed his lawn to look like wheat. And he's, you know, we live in a community, right? We live in the city, and it's right on the corner. And this has happened over the years, and I've gone over and cut it because it looks so heinous. What do you do? How do you talk to a neighbor who should know better?
Well, I did hear some of what you were saying about going out to help some of your neighbors, especially those who are elderly, because that's what neighbors are supposed to do. We're supposed to be neighborly. We're supposed to look out for one another. So I appreciate the fact that you did that. We need more people in this community who step up and do things just like that. So thank you for that first and foremost. If neighbors are doing something, you know, like that, or they have a situation at their property that is unsightly, it should be, because we all live in a community together, that you should be able to just approach them and have a conversation with them about it. Now, I don't know all the circumstances around this particular person. You say this has been happening for some years. I mean, obviously, you know, we've got systems in place where you can report that, but as one of the folks in the studio with you, I believe, said perhaps that person was seeking to participate in No Mo May, which, as far as I understand, you know, you in the city of Milwaukee, we have not approved legislation allowing for that. I mean, I understand the reasonings why that were explained, you know, to help the bees, which, you know, the bee population over the past couple of years has been diminishing. We need bees for, you know, going out and helping with, you know, the crops and all that sort of stuff. So that's important. It's really important. But I don't know if we've gotten there just yet in Milwaukee. I think there's certainly a lot of support for it, but we just haven't gotten to the point of passing legislation around it, I don't believe.
You know, I know what kind of man you are, but I'm pretty sure your next door neighbor, you wouldn't accept him being engaged in No Mo May.
You know, I don't have a problem with the concept. I mean, I think again, like we've got to pass some legislation so it can be legal here in the city of Milwaukee. Because if not, then we're just operating under the normal, you know, 6-inch or 7-inch rule, where if your grass is that tall, then it's got to be cut. Now, there have been instances where my next door neighbor has allowed their grass to grow even beyond May, and just like I'm telling you, you know, I would reach out to Department of Neighborhood Services and say, hey, here's an issue, and that grass would get cut because they get the notice on their door.
Right. Okay. So I just a lot of things to talk about. Let's talk about you as the mayor. You know, it's been nonstop. Let's talk about the months that you've now ascended to the mayor of the city of Milwaukee. What has it been like?
You know, this is I have been telling folks that, you know, running for mayor was the most difficult thing that I've ever done in my life. That is only bested by being the mayor. I mean, it is a long, hard, difficult, stressful, but very rewarding opportunity to serve the people of the city. I mean, the problems and the issues that we face on so many different levels, it's mind-boggling about how often you have to switch hats. I mean, you've heard that term before, you know, switching hats. There's a lot of that in this job, you know, from a day-to-day, moment-to-moment. Like, you're in one conversation about something, and then you got to switch to something entirely different and be up to speed on that, and then do it again, and then do it again, and then do it again. It's a huge, complex, difficult job, but it's very rewarding, though, at the same time.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the issues that you are dealing with. First, let's talk about the Republican convention in 2024, the ins and the outs of it, and what your thoughts are.
Yeah, so I had been in favor of the Republican National Convention coming to Milwaukee, just like I was in favor of the Democratic National Convention coming to Milwaukee in 2020. Now, unfortunately, that, because of COVID, turned into a mostly virtual affair. But the reasons are the same. In 2020, just like in 2024, we're looking at a potential, you know, $200 million economic impact for Milwaukee and our region and our state. You know, those dollars are going to be spent at our hotels, at our bars, at our restaurants. They're going to help businesses that are established, businesses that are trying to be established, and most importantly, put money in the pockets of Milwaukeeans, the hardworking Milwaukeeans in the tourism, convention, and hospitality industry. And I think that's a positive thing. I would like to have the RNC to be a bedrock in which we build a strong foundation to grow a more robust tourism and convention industry in Milwaukee. I think this will help us to attract other large-scale conventions, sports, and entertainment events to Milwaukee. I don't want Milwaukee. Look, Milwaukee is often not even talked about. It's not even in a conversation nationally about, you know, these big events. There are select cities that, you know, these places go to. Now Milwaukee is in that mix, and I want Milwaukee to remain in that mix. I don't want to be an afterthought anymore.
So what do you say to people who say this focus on the downtown area is – it has been an ongoing issue in the other parts of the city, just a few miles away from this this jewel of a downtown suffer. And so even though we bring in this convention, it's not going to reach, in some instances, only half a mile away. It won't reach those neighborhoods and communities. You say what to that?
Well, you know, I think that when I was growing up, and I know this is true for a number of people, particularly, you know, African-American, Latino people who are some of the workers that I just mentioned. They live in neighborhoods, certainly, but, you know, a lot of those folks work down here. They work, you know, in the businesses here. So, of course, we want, you know, the meetings and convention opportunities to happen outside of downtown and in other neighborhoods. And in fact, the DNC, when that was going on, they built this web portal. The Republicans perhaps will do the same thing, where they were looking at having you know, a lot of their meetings and things outside of downtown and actually in neighborhoods, you know, throughout the city. That's something that I continue to support here. But the people who live in neighborhoods, they will see impact from this, especially if they work in business businesses downtown. And we know that there are tens of thousands of people on the north side and on the south side who are African-American, Latino people of color generally, who derive their living from working in establishments downtown where the convention will be.
You know, I like you, lifelong resident of the city of Milwaukee, have seen the tremendous growth. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, safety and whether or not that's been a discussion in those discussions about the convention.
Yeah, I mean, the question of safety is one that we grapple with every single day here in the mayor's office. I am tempered by, you know, the fact that I'm a dad and I've got, you know, a wife and I've got three kids who all live in this city, and I want them to be safe. You know, whether my wife is driving down the street or somebody else's spouse is driving down the street, I want them to be safe. You know, whether kids are trying to learn how to ride their bike or ride their scooter, whether it's my kid or somebody else's kid, I want them to be safe as well. And as it relates to the convention, you know, security is paramount for large-scale events like this. And so the Republicans have looked at that, and we've looked at that with them as well. And so we've already got a plan that's in place because of the DNC. So we'll be making sure that the convention is a safe event for all those involved.
So, Mayor Jensen, we've got to go to a quick break. Can you hang on a second?
Yep.
All right. Mayor Cavalier Johnson, the new mayor of the city of Milwaukee, is on the line. Got to go to a break. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I think we just lost the mayor. But, you know, if he's still listening, you know, call back. What I wanted to talk with him about in the next couple minutes was the continued carnage with, you know, guns. You know, the people talk constantly about the slaughters that have been going on in cities all over this nation, the mass shootings, but they don't talk about the amount of killings that go on, you know, two, three, you know, 10 a night sometimes in cities like Milwaukee. And I just think that it is, you know, missing the point when people don't talk about, you know, the other murders that take place that far outnumber the mass murders, but just the same do as much damage to human life and to families and to loved ones, and the damage that does, you know, in communities. And yes, it is always horrific when there's a major massacre that takes place. There was another one last night where you know, where we got, you know, all right. So, Mayor, are you back?
I'm back. Sorry.
All right. So let me ask you. I don't know if you heard, but I was asking the question about the problems with these guns, and so people talk about it when they see the major massacres. But mayors like you, who are mayors of cities like Milwaukee, witness just slaughters, you know, nightly, and the sheer numbers of people who are murdered in cities like ours, if they ever really just took a count, then people would know just how bad the situation is. What is your take, Mayor Johnson, on the easy accessibility to guns?
You know, I was actually just thinking about this same thing, quite frankly, because every single day since the massacre of small children, and I'm sensitive to this again, too, because I think about my own kids.
Right.
The massacre of those kids in Texas has just been on my mind every single day. And I'm just dumbfounded as to why, as a society in this state and in this country, we allow. This is not because we can't do something. We choose not to do something. We allow for the youngest among us, the most innocent among us, our children, to be slaughtered just because we want folks to have easy access to guns, or we won't implement some common sense rules of the road to stop folks who may be ill-tempered or may be violent from having access because they don't want to, as someone said on Upfront this past week, you know, they want to have the ability to give their gun or sell their gun to their uncle or their brother or whatever without having to
do a background check. Yes.
To do a background check. Yeah, I'm like, okay, it's a deadly weapon. It's a deadly weapon. And, okay, you may be a law-abiding citizen, right, who's giving your gun or selling your gun to your brother, but guess what?
He's
the bad guys out there, they also get to do that under these laws. So if you just get out of your own way and allow yourself to be a little inconvenienced, then guess what? That makes the state, the city, the nation safer for everybody. There are common sense things that we can do, and I'm just dumbfounded as a citizen, as a mayor who, like you said, sees and is updated about the shootings that we have on a daily basis, and as a parent who's got to send his kids to school, you know, every day. Like, I'm sick of this. And I know that people in this city, across the state, and across this country are also sick of it, too. It's senseless, and it does not need to happen. We are allowing it as a society to happen.
You know, Mayor Johnson, you hit upon something I've been harping on for a long time. You know, the fact that you can, if you buy the gun legally, you've got to go through the 48-hour background check. And, you know, the waiting period, but then you can turn around and sell it to anybody. And that's the gun loophole thing that they talk about, which makes no sense whatsoever. And which is at the root of why so many guns get into the hands of children, young people in our neighborhoods, Mayor Johnson. And yet people say, well, let's wait and see what the mayor's going to do. He's a new mayor. Let's see if he can fix this. Well, it's not a matter of the mayor fixing it. It's on a national level where this needs to be fixed.
Correct. And not just that. Look, just to be very clear, you know, I don't control gun law. The city of Milwaukee does not control gun law. That's a state level and a federal level responsibility. So the only thing that we can do is react to it. And I'm sick and tired of reacting to it because other folks in other levels of government are pressured by the gun lobby or whatever, but they're choosing not to take actions that would keep our kids safe. You know what I mean? I mean, just think about what happened downtown a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Downtown, right? I mean, where there were all those people that were shot. You know, there are several systems at play here. The city's system worked. And the city system is police on the street. So when those people fired their guns into the crowd of thousands of folks, well, first of all, they shouldn't, if they're so ill-tempered and would use guns for violence like that in a crowd of people, then they shouldn't have them. But that's the state that controls whether or not folks have that access in the first place. The city's part of the system is police who are there and who arrested 10 people and took 10 guns off the street. We did our part. The mayor, the police chief, the city, we did our part. But we don't control the piece before that, though.
Well, because law enforcement comes after. You know, the law enforcement can't prevent people from getting their hands on guns, right? I mean, they can't. And so to somehow think that law enforcement is supposed to stop that, and I think is backwards thinking.
Yeah.
These continued escalations in the murder rate in our city. People keep talking about Milwaukee as if it's on an island, and it alone is experiencing these upticks in shootings and murders, but it's all over the nation.
It is. I mean, you know, we initiated a curfew here, and I directed the police to, you know, continue, you know, enforcing that citywide, because, and I know there are critics of that who say that, well, you know, it's not effective in terms of crime because those things still happen. Well, my response is, if bad things are happening late at night, then kids, young people have no business out there anyway, so they should be at home, right? But to your point, it is all across the nation. I mean, even the issue of reckless driving is. In Chicago, soon after the incident that happened here, you know, Mayor Lightfoot initiated a curfew downtown because right near the Bean in Millennium Park, of all places, you know, a young person was shot and was killed. And this is all over the United States.
You know, it is, and so for whatever reason, it's something that has to be dealt with. There are no quick fixes. Young people have to be protected. I am one who agrees with the curfew. There are other people who don't. When I was a kid, there was a curfew, and so if it worked back then, I don't know why people should be arguing about it now.
Well, look. You had to be home when the streetlights turned
on. That's correct.
It worked just fine then. It'll work fine now. Get home.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and I know you got to go, Mayor, but let's do this, man. I'm so impressed with your leadership, and not only because where you are now, you really rose. I remember seeing you and meeting you for the first time as a, I was going to say as a young man, but you're that now, as a younger man. And your involvement at the city level, your understanding of city government is important in the position you are in. And as I keep telling people, you're 35 years old, man. You know, I'm twice your age. Just about, and your maturity and your understanding of government, but more than anything else, your understanding of people and your compassion, I think puts you in a position to be the right kind of guy at the right time in this city. And I've seen many mayors over my soon-to-be 70 years on this earth. I've seen many mayors, but I haven't seen anyone like you. I'm really excited about our future. I'm excited about your future as the mayor.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm excited about Milwaukee. I'm here because I care about this city. I'm born and raised here. I want Milwaukee to do well. I know it's got a lot of potential and promise to be just that. And we just have to unlock it. And sometimes we have to get out of our own way, get back to basics and do some common sense things. But there's tremendous upside for Milwaukee, and all of us working together can achieve it. I know we can.
All right. Got to let you go, but I hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Earl.
All right. That's Mayor Cavalier Johnson, the mayor of the city of Milwaukee. Let's go to the phones quickly. Who do we have? Oh, okay. But I want to say that I really do like what the new mayor is doing, what he is going to do. You know, I didn't say this, but on this past Saturday, there was a community event that he and his family, that I was at, and a safe event, and he was there with his wife and his children. He didn't come and make a quick, you know, appearance and then exit stage right. He was there for a couple hours, interacting with the community, children, the elders, you know, and it was genuine. He wasn't there because it was something that, you know, well, it's another one of those events I have to go to. He was there because he knew it was his community and now his city, and he wanted to be amongst the people, and he did that. And, you know, the mayor prior to him would do that also, but he'd come for 10 minutes and be gone. But the Mayor Johnson was there for the better part of a couple hours, and that's the kind of leadership that he has. And great to have him aboard. Got to go to a break. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Be right back. welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, got a lot of things we're going to be talking about this morning. And before I, you know, let the mayor get so far out of my mindset, you know, 35 years old and a mayor of a large city, a large urban city in the country. And he's a bright enough young man. But what makes him so special is that he came from trying circumstances. He's from a family of 10. He's one of the youngest of that family. He has a brother, an older brother, who is a warden. But he also has an older brother who is being charged with attempted murder. And through all of those things, he has learned to deal with the deck, the cards that he was dealt, wound up getting a degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, did some traveling and some work internationally, and is as mature a young 35-year-old that you will ever run across. I am really just excited about the future of that young man and about the future of our city in his hands. The thing and the other thing that I'm so respectful of about the new mayor of our city is that he gets it, he sees it, he understands exactly what the challenges are in urban centers across this nation. And so I've been joined by my guest, Mr. Mike Letts. Hey, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, Earl. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. Where are you located?
Located in Columbia, South Carolina.
Columbia, South Carolina. From everything that I hear from people who have moved down to the Carolinas, they love it. People who've left the North. And are you originally from there or you're transplanted?
No, I'm originally from here, but you're exactly right. Those that are coming love the weather, although it's a little bit warm for myself, but I guess it's better than 10 feet of snow.
Let's talk a little bit about who Mike Letts is.
Well, I have been in my originality is my parents were missionaries. My father's a minister. I'm a minister. And grew up in Mexico, actually, on the mission field, but we're originally from Columbia, South Carolina. I graduated college, and we have a family real estate development company that I'm involved with and that I work for, and got involved in politics, served on council for 30-some years, served as an officer, a law enforcement officer, for the same amount of time, created a national charity that provides bulletproof vests, body armor for officers in need. And we've been trying to make sure that we take care of our thin blue line ever since.
Let me ask you, sir, about the latter thing that you just mentioned, helping to provide vests, bulletproof vests for law enforcement officers. I guess, first off, people would ask the question, we would be under the assumption that all law enforcement officers would have. That would be a part of what they would receive once they say, I'm going to be a law enforcement officer.
And they would be logical to think so. But unfortunately, that's not the case. To give your listeners a little background, we started this charity in 1993, roughly 30 years ago. And at the time, they had just developed the Kevlar, the bulletproof vest. And 52% of officers across the country did not have those vests. Well, we were able to get involved and help bring that figure down to 20%. Understand that we're talking about 1.2 million officers across the country. So when you're talking about 20%, you're still talking about 400,000 to 500,000 officers with no protection. But in the last 5 or 6 years now, a concealable vest, the one that is worn under the shirt, is only designed to stop a sidearm, a pistol. It won't do anything more than that. Over the last 5 or 6 years, our law enforcement officers have been targeted now by assault rifles, long-range rifles. And those, we had to develop new technology called active shooter vests that have titanium plates in them to be able to stop those rounds. But unfortunately, 90% of officers across the country do not have the new technology active shooter vest. You know, with me being on council, I understand there's only so much money to go around. Oftentimes, government feels like if we can put you on the street, we'll worry about trying to get you properly equipped later. It's a tragic situation for all involved.
Okay, so now I understand it. Law enforcement is allocated a bulletproof vest, just not the top of the line or the latest technological advances in bulletproof vests. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that's probably 80% correct. What I mean by that, there are some small agencies across the country who have no vest. But typically now, most of the agencies, 80%, allocate a concealable vest, or at least, you know, a vest that'll stop a sidearm.
You know, you said, and if ever there was a time to examine or what it is you just said, it's now. The AR-15.
Correct.
The vest you are talking about, will it stop an AR-15 round?
An active shooter vest, yes, it sure will. It will stop any round out there.
Okay.
But the concealable vest, the one that most of them have under their shirt, it will not. No, it'll cut right through it.
So I wanted to ask you your thoughts then on what everybody is talking about. We see these constant, assaults that are taking place. Is law enforcement in support, as far as you know, of citizens owning these types of weapons? I had someone on the other day from a different part of the country who represented Gun Owners of America, and he said that law enforcement supports having citizens with these types of arms. I wonder what your thoughts are.
Well, actually, yes, sir. The vast majority of law enforcement officers do. And let's look at the facts as to why. Because typically what we're missing in the equation is it's not an inanimate object. It's a human being that creates the issue. Where it's an assailant driving his SUV through a parade and killing people. Whether it's somebody stabbing somebody with a knife, shooting him with a gun. The problem that we have gotten away from this country is holding people accountable for their actions. The actual objects that they use are inanimate. They can be used any way a person desires to do so. And so we're very careful to make sure that we deal with the source of the problem. That's the human that's behind the object.
So unlike,
and that's what we feel like we've let down.
Unlike the guest I had on earlier, you sound like more than a reasonable guy. You're a thoughtful guy. I can tell just by our early moments in this conversation. But I have to really challenge this belief that it's an inanimate, we know it's an inanimate object. There's no question at all about it. But because you constantly hear that refrain, guns don't kill people, people kill people. But then right. You don't go on to the next step of that. Guns don't kill people. People with guns kill people. So I mean, it. If people didn't have I just had the mayor of our city on.
Sure.
And he talked about what many other mayors are talking about, the carnage that goes on in our cities that don't get talked about as much as these massacres. Can you hold on for a second while we go to a quick break?
Sure.
All right. We got to go to a break. I'm excited about my guest, Mr. Mike Letts. We'll be right back. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.